Oh yeah, we got Doc.
Sorry. Shh, guys, we're on a meeting.
All right. Well, Josiah, welcome to Living on Purpose. So nice of you to join us.
Thank you. That's nice to be able to be here.
Yeah, you made it. And you're not the only one in the crowd who's a little challenged technically, but just makes us all feel more connected, right? Thanks, Aaron. I've got some questions for you, Josiah, and I also want to just open the floor to you in spirit also, like we can kind of see what wants to happen here in this next little bit. Is there anything you want to start out with?
Hello, everybody, and I'll leave it up to you what direction you'd like to go into.
Okay, and yeah, feel free to follow any other lead as well. So you were in Nova Scotia and you were in British Columbia, and that's where you met Ev, who's on, and it was Ev who introduced us. And when we talked initially a couple of weeks ago, I was quite intrigued. Like, you kept dropping in breadcrumbs from your path, you know, as to where you've been and what you've been doing. And it'd be great for, since everybody's meeting you today besides Ev, if you want to share a glimpse of your path and how you've come to do what you're doing and maybe what you enjoy about what you're doing.
I don't know how far back you want me to go.
Well, okay, sorry, I'd be more specific. So when you were young, when did you first notice that you had a different kind of gift than other people? Did you think that everybody could see and hear and do what you do, or how did that come to your attention?
I guess that it was a difficult path in a lot of ways, because I had a father that was in secret services. And I would always be getting in trouble for things that I was talking about, but I had no idea what I had said wrong. And my grandmother, both my grandmothers used to do readings, and my mom used to get infuriated with my grandmother because my mom would ask my grandmother questions and she'd say, "Ask Josiah." and I was only like 3 years old, 4 years old. And so there's always this tension between me and my parents. And my mom told me when I finally stumbled into doing this work that they'd actually lied to me about everything all my life. If I said something, they would tell me the opposite, which she still does to this day. She's 97 years old. She says that it's raining, you know, I'll say it's actually sunny, and she'll yell at me saying, "No, it's not." And they were always threatening to lock me up if I talked about the things that I talked about or if I wrote the things down. But I was constantly having these conversations with, I thought that it was just my thoughts or thinking. That's what I was told that it was. But I guess that I was communicating with spirits and angels all my life, but I just never understood that. And I wasn't allowed to read anything about anything esoteric or to look into it or talk to people or have friends that at all. It's like, because they tried to keep me isolated because of the things that I would talk about. And I guess maybe more from my dad's perspective, that would make more sense because he was in secret services and I had no idea. Like, I guess he was hired for his ability because he was, I guess, very psychic. So he would track down communist uprisings and draw people that needed to be taken to that place, like to expose things. So he was using his abilities that way. And so in some ways, maybe he thought he was protecting me, or he was protecting himself or the family, because he taught me how to know if somebody was watching the house, how to know if the phone was tapped, how to lose people when he taught me how to drive. It's like, how to tell if somebody was following us. It's like, and I was like, it's not in the manual. And so all my life, people would kind of come up and start asking questions. And I think that they were like kind of the nice friendship for me, but it turned out that as soon as I got the answers they wanted, they would disappear. And so through the years, different people would say that I was this amazing psychic. And I was like, I didn't even know what that was. I didn't believe in it. I wanted to be a tree planter and live in the country. So it wasn't until even in college and university, I was always criticized for being too creative or knowing too much in school, because growing up as well, like I could get the answers to the questions in exams, but I couldn't do the work, or I didn't need to do the work because I had the answer. So I was always accused of cheating and lying. I was tree planting one year, I got bitten by a spider. And I guess at the spirit world, they say that when we are being called, or when the healers need to be exposed to greater ways of seeing things, they'll have an injury or an illness or an emotional upset. And as they're healing and recovering, they incarnate the tools that they need for the next part of the journey. And so I've had a lot of those experiences. But the one that set me on the path was being bitten by a spider when I was tree planting, and almost lost my leg from blood poisoning. And so I was recovering and looking for a different work. I stumbled into, I think I mentioned that to you, and how I ended up going to a psychic line to do an interview, thinking, I thought it was a joke. So I thought it would be a fun thing to go to, not because I thought I was psychic, but because I thought it would be a joke. And they put me through all these tests, and I was feeling very embarrassed and was getting up to go out the back door. And this lady yelled at me, "Where are you going?" And I said, I apologized to her and said, "You know, I didn't think this was serious. I thought it was just going to be a big joke. And I realized you guys are really serious." And I said, "I apologize for wasting your time." And she came running and she slammed the door in front of me. And she goes, "You're the most desperate person we've ever had come through our doors. We want you to start tomorrow." And I was like, what? It's like all that stuff comes from somewhere else. It's not coming from my head. And that's kind of how it began.
So starting with a psychic line, and that was how you felt more identified or validated?
Very validated. It was just, I worked with 30 other psychics there, and is a very crazy path, because within my first 3 months of being there, I became the one that all the clientele would call for, and actually upset everybody. Everybody was really jealous and mad. And so then the business started, like after a couple of years, I started lying to people and saying I was on holidays or I wasn't there, and trying to send business to the other psychics. And I learned a lot, like from all of the people. There's some really amazing gifted readers there that I learned how to do this work. And the validation that came from it as well was, it was sometimes ridiculous, like the simplest things. I remember I used to get upset with some people because they'd call in and they'd either be drunk or stoned. And there was a couple of times they'd become quite abusive. And I've just tried to be very pleasant and say, you know, I'm going to hang up now, that, you know, I don't like doing readings for people that are intoxicated. And so why not call back? You know, I don't want you to waste your time or your money. So why not call back when you're a little bit more together? And one night this woman started swearing at me and yelling, "I've already wasted like X number of dollars," because it would cost them like $200 an hour to talk to me at that time. I only got $20 out of that. But this lady's just yelling, and she said, "Just tell me the first thing that comes off the top of your head." And I was just about to hang up, and I said, "You lost your horse." And she goes, "Oh my God." And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" It's like, she goes, "We got one back, but the other one's still missing." "Are we gonna get it back?" And I just said, the feeling just came, "Yep, you will in 2 days." And I just hung up on her, and I was just like, "I can't be real." And I get people, like, they lost their contact lens, you know, they couldn't figure out where it was, and it's just under the bathroom. It's like, "Oh, there it is," you know. And you're like where does this stuff come from? It's like this craziest things. And it was quite a journey, like, in just the validation that came from all of those experiences. And that's where the spirit started teaching me that I wasn't just a psychic or a tarot reader. And I realized, like, in that group of people that called themselves psychics, they were all different kinds of people. Some of them called themselves mediums, some were tarot card readers, some would do crystals, some would do, you know, everybody has seemed to have a different thing. And what seemed to kind of distinguish mine with the spirit started calling me an oracle because I could do all of that. And that they would use all these different things to pass messages. And that's where what we call the oracles is like cards and runes and stones and scrying, all these different things are just forms of communicating with spirit. And numerology is the same, like every single aspect is just another way of communicating with spirit.
And the I Ching as well.
Actually, how I started with the I Ching, it was the only thing that I could really identify with. And so when I went to the psychic line, when they did hire me, I thought, all I have, all I know is the I Ching. So I thought, well, I'll just use that. And I learned very quickly that that didn't work online. It's like, you can't spend 20 minutes casting coins and working out the hexagrams and things. And so I was kind of like thrown into the water and had to learn to swim like all by myself. And through the years, I found I bought every book I could imagine to try to help me with the craft. And I learned very quickly that a lot of these people were all just repeating things that they had read themselves and that they didn't really know. So a lot of the psychics, like they would come up to me after I'd worked there for almost 10 years, that they'd come to me, especially the newer staff. They'd say, you know, I put down all these cards for the client, but it doesn't make any sense at all to me. And it's like, that's because you're reading them by the book. It's like each one of these cards, there's symbolisms and things that are our ancient history. Like these things are basically oracles that allow us to tap into ancient knowledge. And so colors, the imagery, the numbers, like all of these things are ways that spirit communicate with us. And spirit tries to bring us messages through these kinds of things and these involvement in their lives. And they want that involvement in our lives. And this is where there's so many different levels of spirit and angels and angelic forces and councils, like all of these things, like they're all bound to the earth plane. So when we cross over, we don't get to just trip off to Pluto or somewhere else unless we actually have training that allows us to do that. It's like we're bound by the earth plane. And the same thing with our telephone calls and our TVs and our radios. It's like when you hang up or you turn off the TV or you turn off the radio, the station doesn't just automatically evaporate and get drawn off to some other place in the universe. It's bound by the earth plane. And so it teaches us about all of these technology, all of these vibrations. Each one of these is a different form of spirit. And so we have different levels of spirit. We have low frequencies and low vibrations up to the highest vibrations. And that's where we might look at considering like what we might call a God source is really the highest resonance like of electromagnetic energy. When they say in the Bible, God is unconditional love, God is in all things, the practice of non-reaction is what allows us to tap into the highest vibrations. Whenever we're in a state of reaction, we can only tap into the lower vibrations, the lower frequencies. And in a lot of ways, we're seeing that right now in our world, that the greatest virus in our world is fear. And as long as people are in a state of fear, they can't reach the highest vibrations. And this is where the spirits always teach that love is actually not an emotion. We're trained in our world and through Hollywood that love is an emotion, but it's not. When you feel love, you're in your feeling body. And when you feel love, you feel trust, you feel confidence, you feel joy, you feel all of these things are one. And when you're in that place, you're in the present moment. It's the only time you're in the present moment and your spirit is in your body, everything. You're feeling safe, you feel secure. As soon as there's fear or worry or anger, stress, grief, in Chinese medicine and ancient medicines, all of these emotions are called evil spirits. And the evil spirits will use the elements of our world to enter people's bodies. And as soon as they can enter the body using some different mechanism, then the longer that they can stay in the body, they actually can manifest in the tissue and the bone and cause disease. And so in the Bible, it says you have to choose between God and Satan. And if we look at those things and break them down into their basic understanding, God is unconditional love. God is in all things. It doesn't say anywhere that God is a man with a beard. is going to punish you if you don't do what he says. God is in unconditional love. God is in all things. And I had an angel appear in front of me once, and he said, unconditional love is the practice of non-reaction. It's been stolen from the world, and it's foreign to this world, and it's what you have to practice now to bring it back into the world. One day I stumbled onto, looking at different languages and the meaning of different vocabulary that we use in our world. And the word Satan is actually an ancient Sumerian word that means to give power to something over you. And when you give that power to something over you, it will cause you to struggle and suffer. In the Bible, it says you have to choose between God and Satan. So if we break those things down into basic meaning, it means you have to choose between reacting and not reacting. When we're in a state of non-reaction, it doesn't mean that we don't take action to do things. It's kind of like with the convoy. They're going out peacefully. They're taking action to stop a terrible reaction that's happening in the world. They're trying to stop something. Satan is about reacting, and Satan is, in the Bible, it says, surrounded by a legion of demons. And demons, in the ancient terminologies, represent the emotions. So we have to choose to be controlled by emotions or by being in a state of non-reaction to reach the highest vibrations. And if we look at it from that perspective, when people talk about Earth kind of being like prison, and this is kind of like a premise, I don't know how to get there or if it can be proven or not. But as long as we're in the state of reaction, Earth becomes a prison to us in a way, because we keep perpetuating these emotions, and these emotions will evolve in a very specific world perspective or experience in the world. If you have fear, anger, worry, and then we're kind of dominated by those in our world, and especially right now. If we choose to be in a state of non-reaction, does that actually shift us into another dimension where those things don't exist? And then how do we do that? How do we get there? There's some very interesting things that the spirits always wake me up in the middle of the night and make me turn on YouTube and look for different things. And these videos will just pop up that are just a bit mind-boggling. It's kind of like giving your a friend a box, a puzzle, and just spilling it on the table and saying, okay, like put it together. And so I get all these pieces that seem to be thrown on the table in front of me. And it's like, how do you put that puzzle together? Something the spirits talk about a lot and the angels talk about is that we come from the world, that we are put here to create and keep this garden in balance on this earth, and that we are the caretakers of it. And that there's these beings that came here. And if you can imagine, it's kind of like a similar story. If we look at the indigenous peoples of North America, or what we call the indigenous peoples, and there's actually some controversy around that that's been shown recently. It's like, but basically they lived with the land and the nature, and the Spaniards came and they were peaceful people and very giving, brought these people in, and the Spaniards saw them as being stupid because they were just kind. They just shared everything with them. And so they saw that as people that could be taken advantage of. And in a way, that's what our world is about this time. That human beings are very peaceful people. But if you can train humans to want to be at a higher status, then there's some people that can be trained to believe, well, that they're greater, have more than others. So if we can imagine a history where there was people that were indigenous to this planet, that they were actually put here to mind the garden. And then there was beings that came here from somewhere else. And this is where there's this, it's a funny thing, like the best way to hide something is right out in the open. So all you have to say is, do you think that there's life outside this earth? And everybody goes, maybe we should spend trillions of dollars looking for it. and create a thing called NASA and go searching. But what if they're already here and that they're dominating humans and they don't want us to understand that we have this ability to communicate with spirit? And what if we have this ability to live in higher dimensions and have abilities that we all have abilities that could give us that power to be able to heal and create and do things in this world. But when they came here, they didn't like that because they came here for a purpose. They wanted the minerals of the earth, so they would dig up the earth. And so people that have that power, they would automatically go, oh my God, we've got to fix it. And so they go fill in the hole, do some prayers, you know. And so that would really piss those people off. The same thing when I would do spearheaded a lot of things for in the Kootenays, there was the corporations were being hired to come in and do a lot of clear cutting. And so I kind of spearheaded and got people involved in doing research on, because it was a very fragile microcosm in the Kootenays that don't exist anywhere else on the earth. And there's about 50 different families in these communities that all got their water out of the watersheds that came out of these mountainous areas. And we had 3,000 people on the roadblock. And then a lot of people got arrested and taken away, and we weren't allowed to go back in afterwards by the, they were forced out. I think it was 3 bulldozers went in and bulldozed the entire mountain. It just takes a handful of those people. It's like, so people feel this thing that we all have, our feeling beings. And it's something that through the years, it was always a question. If I have these abilities, do other people have them? And why aren't they awake? And when we look at our educational system, it's quite brilliant. Children are in their feeling bodies until they're about 4 or 5. You can't really break that. That's their experience. As soon as they reach about 4 or 5, then we put them into schools where they're trained into linear thinking. And so 1 and 1 is 2, 3 and 3 is 6, east, west, you know, we do all these things like where it's structural, A, B, C, D. It's like we train the mind to function on one side so that we disable that creative side of ourselves. And children that have those kind of greater abilities, then they're labeled as autistic or ADD, or they're dyslexic. And so they need to be medicated. We don't want children like that. The system isn't trained to raise children like that. And then the reason that a lot of people think, well, you have to have a university degree, is because if you don't do that, you want people in the corporate world are trained specifically into linear thinking, so that you can keep that regime a hold of it. And that's why people that are blue collar workers tend to be more intuitive, more creative. And so this is where you create these hierarchies to keep people from ever really realizing that or achieving that. And that's one of the things with a lot of the books in the library that I created for myself. It just seemed like they want to be, they have an understanding of something, but they don't know how to go beyond that place, because we've been so trained into this fabric. And that's why people, you know, that do this kind of work were called the woo-woo people, you know. It's like they're a bit crazy and they don't really know what they're doing. They're making it all up, you know. And so there's a lot of discredit to it, which again reinforces that plane, like where you have to be analytical, you have to go to university, you have to have a PhD to be able to get a job and to be a participant in this, a serious participant in our world. Even with the media right now, people are standing up for what they feel. And the media is going, that's bad. That's bad. It's like, if you do that, you're a fringe minority misogynist kind of person. And I think that a lot of what's happening in the world, if you go back to that original premise that if they did genetically manipulate people so that they were dumbed down, so they didn't have access to those facilities. And what if there was a time clause on that, that they say that, like right now we've entered into the thick of the photon belt. And they say that as we enter into the thick of the photon belt, which will last for the next 2000 years, we've crossed the galactic equator into the constellation of Aquarius. Aquarius is all about a stronger gravitational force, which brings us into one alignment within ourselves, where we become stronger individuals and we have this ability to communicate, starts opening up. And communication becomes paramount to Aquarians as well. But one of the things that happens with Aquarius and the constellation of Aquarius is because it's the smallest star system and has the strongest gravitational force, the planets come closer together and the planets also come closer to the sun. So what we call global warming, there's so many controls in our world. People think that they have choice, but actually they're only given choices. And then we're blamed for these things in our world. We're blamed for polluting the world, but then we're only given the choices that do pollute. People that come up with new technologies are discredited. And especially so many amazing technologies out there that we could completely negate all pollution in the world. But if we take another step back and we look at there, maybe there was a race of beings that came here and they wanted things from the earth themselves, for themselves. Well, once you start extracting all of these things from the earth, you end up with garbage, with waste products that build up. It's a brilliant plan that if you take those waste products and you repurpose them and sell them to the people, it's a win-win, right? And same thing with oil and gas. So I remember with a client, he was a physicist, and we were having this discussion. His wife had passed away, and so we were tracking hers. She was a pretty amazing being. She traveled the world with Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses, protecting him from an evil spirit that was invading him. And so she chose me to work with her husband to let him know where she was and the progress that she was making. And it was very, that's a whole thing. When we look at these things, you know, that he said that isn't it common knowledge that when you take crude oil from the earth and you process it, that you get the strongest, lightest steel out of that, that it's extracted from that. I said, no, it's not good. At least I have never heard of that before. And then you have oil and gasoline and crude oil that, like, or not crude oil, but the refined oil that comes out of that process. So then you can't just leave that stuff sitting around. So it makes a lot more sense all of a sudden. And you sell it back to the people, you create a technology that you can get rid of it with, but you don't want that stuff sitting around because it's very volatile. And then you don't want anybody creating any new technologies because you would end up with all this garbage sitting around that's very volatile. It's kind of like a lot like nuclear waste. It's like they don't know how to get rid of it at this point. So they've been storing it in different places. And that was one thing with Julia Roberts' movie on Hanford. And a lot of people in the Okanagan think that they live in a really safe place, but it's actually 100 miles straight south of Kelowna is one of the largest nuclear waste dumps in the world. But they don't know how to repurpose that nuclear waste yet to sell it back to the people. So it's just sitting there. So then you have to keep people dumbed down. You have to stop them from having access to this place within themselves. And what the spirits have said, like, this is a time of illumination coming into this time where people will become aware of these gifts, become aware that this lock that's been put inside of us becomes unlocked during this time. So this might sound like a completely bizarre thing, and I guess we have to be careful with the vaccinations, maybe interfering with that, stopping us from finding that place within ourselves. And if we look at the logic behind it, the CDC says that 80% of the population will only have mild flu-like symptoms if they contract COVID. And then they say that the vaccines are 80% effective at only helping people to have mild symptoms. I don't know, something there doesn't sound right to me. And so what is it really that's going on? And so I really think that there are people that do have some really amazing abilities, and they've been kind of used throughout history, like even with my father being used by secret services to do that work, and people used to do remote viewing during the war. It's like there's people that can do these psychic healings. Even it goes back with in the time of Jesus, he was one of the Essenes, they say, and the Essenes had these abilities, these ancient practices where they could reattach severed arms and heal the sick. If people were blind, they could restore sight. There's all these things that these abilities that they had. And so when we look at the witch hunts throughout history, the witch hunts were really to track down these healers, these people that had these abilities, because they want to flatline them. They don't want that in the world. They don't want people to be woken up, if we can put it from in that perspective. And it was an interesting thing when I lived in Montreal. I met a man at a political banquet. He asked if I would talk with him. And he said that the entities that run the world do not want enlightened beings. They want workers. And so poison is being put in the food and the water. And it was his job to write the laws that allowed that to happen, he said, so that people can't feel anymore, that they're in a constant state of reaction so that they can't access those places. He said, people that know how to feel and can be in their feeling bodies can't be controlled the way that people that are reacting can be. And so he said, you can't control an enlightened being. And so there's an awareness around that. And then he started crying because he said he had no idea that he'd gotten himself into that situation. And so he said that he was writing things into the laws that would allow people like me to take them apart one day. I didn't know what that meant. But so when we look at all of this, you know, a lot of people see it, these people as being special or different from the rest of the world. But really, I think that we all have it in varying degrees. We have to be able to manage it and to use it, because in our world, we're taught that, especially like with the world right now, like the more money you have, the more special you are, and that your life is worth more than somebody else's life. And so we'll find that a lot of people look at power, become power hungry, and they can abuse these things. And so if you can imagine, it's kind of like being in a secret society where you have to have this knowledge, and to move up, you have to be able to master it and surrender in some way to use it properly. And that's where it becomes a great responsibility. I have a lot of clients that call and say, like, I went to this card reader and they told me I was going to be killed in a car accident next week. And I'm just be like, I can't take away what they said, but I can maybe help you to find ways to cope with what you've been told. Or one year there was a woman, she was frantic. She had just invited her family, all of her family, for Christmas in Vancouver. And she was so excited. And she had this reading from a psychic that said that there's going to be a massive earthquake in Vancouver and that her and her family were going to be killed in the earthquake. It's just like, how do you fix that? It's like a terrible incantation that you can cast on. And I said, you know, like, if you really do, I can't take away what she said. I can tell you that I think that there would be a lot more information out there right now that it won't be just a big surprise that we see that other psychics would be coming up with this, or there'd be something, some warnings. So I said, you know, if you are still afraid, then you could always like offer to rent some hotel rooms in Calgary and ask your family to follow you there. She goes, well, I'm not going to do that. I really think you're going to have a very good Christmas in Vancouver, so don't worry. But there's a lot of people that make money off of people like that. And I had a lot of clients just like, well, I bought this psychic a washer and a dryer, and I gave them money for property and to pay off their mortgage. And they told me that that's the only way that I had a way around dying, or I had a way around these accidents. And like, so there's a lot of people that are really, that take advantage of people. And again, it's like, it's the same thing in our world right now. Like, the greatest virus is fear and anger now as well.
When we talked at first, Josiah, and thank you for all of that. That was an amazingly long answer to my question. You were talking about prayer. Like, how would you describe the mechanics of prayer?
What the spirits teach, again, is if we look at vocabulary, the word to pray means to practice. That's all that it means. And in our world, we're taught that to pray means to wish. But the Spirit teaches that when people are wishing for something, when they're praying, they're hoping that someone will get well, or they're hoping that things will get better. They're hoping, they're praying for more money. They're praying for better health. They're praying for their kids to be safe. And so what the Spirit teaches it, and this comes back to the practice of manifestation, that whatever is the strongest feeling is what the wish is. And so when people are wishing for things to get better or to have more money or for someone to be well, in their feeling body, their strongest feeling is that they're not well, that there is no more money, that things won't get better. And that's what they manifest. And so prayer really needs to be coming from a place where it's already happened. It's like, I do have this wealth. I am healthy. Because then the Spirit can bring us the answers, the solutions that we need to fix those things. But we're trained in our world that when we wish for these things, we're giving our power to something else. We're giving it to the doctor or to the lawyer or to the boss at work. Like, we're giving our power away to others, hoping that they'll fix it or make it better, especially with governments and things like that. It's like people, they've been disempowered at every stage. And we're taught to trust the outside world, but the Spirits teach that the more you trust within yourself, and that's what prayer connects with. It's like practicing being in that state of non-reaction. And the more you trust that, the more the answers come to you, and the more that we manifest things in the world in a different way. And again, we choose a different life at that point. So some people think that prayer is like meditation. Some have different practices, like in Buddhism, some people chant, some people do mantras. There's all these different methods that are basically all kind of the same premise. People are practicing the same premise by giving their power to something external instead of practicing that prayer that when we pray, it's like that it's inside of us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a really big shift in some ways, right? Because like you describe it, I think we have this sort of stance of a one-way monologue and like focusing on the lack of what we're focused on. I mean, it's, and the word want comes up, you know, I want this, I want that. So, which again is reinforcing the lack.
The Walt Disney animated program, The Little Mermaid, it really kind of talks about that same premise. It's like that we go after things, and it's actually in the ancient Chinese philosophies as well, that when we search for these goals, and we've been trained to be goal-oriented people, and that even love is a goal. And when you attain that goal, then you'll have love, or you'll find that place within yourself. But when we do that, we lose our voice. And that's like the Little Mermaid. She wants so much to have certain things in her world. And so the Sea Witch makes her make a pact, and she gives up her voice to be in this world, and how difficult it is to be in that world at that point. But when she stands up and comes back into this place where has her inner voice, her voice comes back and she has everything she wanted. Like, there's these principles in a lot of these types of programs where there's very deep esoteric secrets attached to them. The same thing is with the Bible. They say that the Bible is written in what's a method called the Pesha method, that if you only have a little bit of knowledge, then it's a nice story. If you have a little bit more knowledge, you might pick up things within the storylines that have meaning to you. If you have more knowledge, there's another story in behind that's being written there, and it goes up in stages that way. It's what's called the Pesha method, that there's stories within stories, and that the more that you know, the more you can extract from that, which can elevate you to higher dimensions, higher vibrations. And so that's what prayer really is about, is using that. I used to do a lot of meditation, different types of meditation, and I go on sometimes these week-long or one-month-long meditations. And it was kind of interesting because in the practices, there'd always be this parts of it, like where when you're sitting for long periods of time and focusing, you have to get up and do walking meditations and eating meditations and washing dishes meditation. And I realized, you know, it's like, and it's funny because we need to be doing this in everything we do, being focused. And that's when I realized that I found that the word meditate actually is, comes from Greek and Sumerian origins, and it means to focus. That's all that it means. And so when we think of meditation, we think of crossing our legs and sitting for long periods of time, and we're waiting for something to happen or not happen. But really, it's we're practicing being in the present moment, and we're waiting for something like Hollywood to happen. It's a very interesting thing. And I did a lot of work with different Buddhist communities in the Kootenays, and I built their altars and things for about 3 or 4 different Buddhist communities. And so because of the work I did, I was invited to be present for, there was 5 Rinpoches that had come in out of Tibet. They were in exile in Canada, in the Kootenays. And so I was invited to take part in this meeting, and they gave me blessings and gave me a special name to use for my meditations. And we were allowed to ask one question each. There was only about 3 or 4 of us who were invited to this special ceremony. And so the one burning question that I had, every time we sit down to meditate in the Buddhist temples, you have to take the vow of compassion. And that's that I shall not become enlightened until all other sentient beings become enlightened. It sounds really nice and everything. But in my head, I'm like, well, if nobody ever becomes enlightened, how can anyone else ever find the way? And if you're waiting for everybody else to do it, that doesn't make any sense. So that was my question to these Rinpoches, and they only spoke Tibetan. So there was an interpreter, and she asked the question. I said, again, you know, it's like, how, if we're supposed to take this vow, then how has anybody ever find it? And also, because you are all Rinpoches and have all this amazing knowledge and wisdom, isn't that incongruent with the vow of compassion? Because you're supposed to be more enlightened than all of us. So they sat there and they talked over my question for like 10 or 15 minutes, like, and I was sitting there waiting for my answer. And finally, they all turned to the interpreter, and they bowed to me, and they said something to her, and she turned and she bowed to me, and she goes, they thank you very much for your very auspicious question. Next. I was like, okay.
Wow.
You know, when we read books and we go to these great teachers, and I've seen this over and over, like, we think that someone has all the answers, and that we should trust all these people and all these things. But that's where the spirit's always taught, you have to trust within yourself. I remember one of the first awakenings before I started doing this work was at a month-long Vipassana Buddhist meditation. And after about a week, I was seeing all these people that were like see-through and angels attending to everybody in the room. There was about 30 people in the room doing the meditation at the same time. And I'd never seen anything like that. And we're allowed again to ask one question once a week to the moderators. And so I went up and was very patient and peaceful and asked my question. You know, I don't know where all of this is coming from, all these beings that I'm seeing in the room that I could see right through them. I don't understand. And they said, well, how long have you been meditating for? And I said, about 5 or 6 years now, like every day, and maybe a bit longer. And they said, oh, that's not long enough. And I said, what do you mean it's not long enough? Well, it must be some aberrations or something that's coming from your past. There's no explanation for that. And I just remember thinking, I'm out of here. It's like, they couldn't answer the question. And through the years, I've learned that that's what I do. I see spirits, I see angels. And that was kind of like one of the first times that it just really opened up. And that was when I was being focused inside and creating that stillness. But it took a long time of just sitting in that space to actually become aware of it, of being in the present moment and being within myself. And it was a very powerful experience. And I think that when we go to these types of experiences, that most people don't get to that place because they're being given instructions. The biggest moments, they were supposed to focus on the triangle below the nose. And it's like, I'm still not there yet. And so people are, there is still external. They're not, unless what I say, like, you can have these people that are as brilliant as they are and the amount of training and knowledge that they have, but they're still not there yet. And so how do we find that place? How do we find our way there? And that's where I think in the world right now, that's a big threat to the powers that be, if we look at it from that perspective.
For sure. And there's a lot of trust in ourselves to accept that that's possible. Because like you say, we do have that orientation to people and direction and authority outside ourselves to trust that over our own knowing. Mm-hmm. So Josiah, in this kind of a situation where we have people listening to us, are you aware of them and their crowds, as it were? Like, do you tap yourself back being around people because are you automatically aware of what's going on with them?
Quite often. In some ways, I guess that my experiences with my parents helped me to learn how to rein it back so that I wouldn't mess up or create problems. But it really is hard that when I am in a group situation, I tend to I can't shut it off, really. It's like, and so I'll just start into things all the time, and I'll be drawn to certain places or certain people, and just all the stuff will start coming out. And
yeah, it must be a very interesting life that you have. Okay, well, so with the people with us today, what would be most preferable to you? Like, can I ask each of them if they want to ask you one short question? Is that okay? Yeah?
That would be great.
Okay, so opening it up, unless there's anything else you want to say right now, Josiah, before I ask somebody who, if they would like to say anything.
You might not want to get me started.
That's true.
I'm just a channel, so it's like when things are coming through, I have no control. It just starts coming. So.
Lucky you. Would somebody like to ask a question? Do you want to put up your hand if you'd like to ask something of Josiah? Oh, come on, don't be shy.
That's quite often what happens. People get all, they get so much that it's kind of like the process a lot.
Okay, well, until somebody puts up their hand, I will ask you another question. When I had a reading with you recently, I haven't actually listened to the recording of it again, but I really appreciated many aspects of it. And one thing that I learned, which is helpful to me just in talking to myself about making decisions, is I asked you this or that, and you said, no, just ask one of those questions. And I went, oh, okay. And that opened it right up. And some of what you said then was like so clear, and you even sneezed, which you said was an affirmation that it was a yes. It was just so helpful, and that day it helped me go forward into action on that question with complete confidence, and I met the perfect person in the perfect place to help me facilitate this decision, and I just loved it, and I wanted to thank you for that. And I think it's a good reminder that we can confuse ourselves with two questions when there's really just one.
That's what happens, and it's like what you had happen by following, trusting yourself. You unlock the door to synchronicity. Synchronicity is the currency of that world. And these things just seem to happen magically. And as soon as we get into these places, this duality, that's what we've been trained to do in our world, is we've been trained to think. And so your thinking mind is overriding what the feeling is. We've been trained to do that. So we'll get the feeling, I should do this. But then the thinking mind kicks in and goes, well, we have to think about this and we have to do things logically. which can actually get in the way or negate what we should be doing. And so a lot of times people, even clients have been calling for years, they still do the same thing. It's like, can I ask this question about this and that? And it's like, well, do you want to ask if you can ask the question, or do you want to ask the question? Okay, well, it's like the same thing with yourself. It's like, then we have to kind of come back to this place. Like, it's a really interesting thing. Like, when we are looking at things and asking questions, are we really in that place where we're asking the right question? And why are we asking the question in the first place? And so sometimes I have to go through quite a process with people to ask, even when I'll do cards around and I'll say, the cards are saying that you still aren't asking the right question. And
with the I Ching, I learned it many, many years ago when I was first out west, you know, over 30 years ago, somebody who picked me up hitchhiking, you know, brought me home and taught me the I Ching. And I remember that was one of the things, like, tell me what I need to know. When you don't know what the right question is, or, you know, where to go, it's like trusting that there's something that you don't know that you need to know.
Well, that's one of the things as well as the I Ching. And it's something that I've learned through doing readings through the years. A lot of times people say, well, you're just talking. And I'm like, no, I'm actually channeling. And it's just like when you're reading the I Ching, it gives you this philosophy. And it's kind of like as you're reading all of that stuff, it distracts you from this thing, which brings you back into your feeling body. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But
yeah, and with the I Ching, actually, you're reminding me that I find that I go to it when I have that really strong feeling. Like there's a really strong question, a strong sense of a knowing that there's more clarity available to me and that I can consult it.
Well, sometimes these questions that we have are so fundamentally deep that they need a philosophy behind them, because it's actually, sometimes these things are actually shifting us to in a new direction in life. Like it's changing the vibrational, like we're moving to a different vibrational kind of frequency in a way. And there's no understanding for that in our world. It's like, because we're trained to do things in a linear way. And sometimes what's really happening is that because we're vibrational beings, as we are learning things, we're incarnating tools for the next part of the journey. And are we aligning ourselves with our true journey, or are we going off the path somewhere else? And that's what most of the readings are about. I do is helping people to kind of, they might have a specific idea about this is where I need to get to and this is where I'm going. But then there might be something that nobody's seen. And all of a sudden, as soon as they look at that, it's like everything just happens so smoothly and easily. And so that's what the spirits are always trying to do, is help people to find that place, to trust that place within themselves. And I usually try to get people not to talk too much during a reading, because I am just channeling. And at the end, I'll always open it up like, well, is there any questions? And they'll be looking at me like, nope. You answered everything.
Covered it all. Come on now. Oh, Patty has her hand up. Hi, Patty.
I always have questions.
Just letting the dogs out, so keep moving.
Yeah, I was going to say, let the dogs out.
They're getting mad at me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
There we go.
I wish to acknowledge the hardship it must have been in your life to be a young Chav. Your parents negate, you know, the inner light and your own internal knowledge. So I wish to acknowledge that. And I'm sure it must have been very hard, and certainly hard for all of us to have that.
But it's also part of the journey, you know, like understanding and claiming those places. Like it's kind of I don't know if that's right. I just wanted to say that.
I understand that, and that you're aware of it, and it's still painful. So I would just wish to send some love to you from that regard. So I do have a question, because you spoke about reaction, and I am an activist, and I can see where like things make my blood boil because injustice, I see a lot of injustice and it's very difficult to respond to. Mm-hmm. And I do my best to respond rather than react. How do we respond to so much injustice to affect change?
As long as we're in a state of reaction, we're feeding into the injustice.
Yes.
And it's exactly what it wants. I totally understand what you're saying because I get the same way. It's like sometimes it's just like my blood just starts boiling and it's just like, I have to go for a walk. It's like, I have to find some way to ground myself. What we can do is if we go into a state of non-reaction, and it's kind of like what's going on in the world right now. We can look at and blame the politicians and the pharmaceutical industries and everything, but there's something behind it all. And until those things come down, it'll keep repeating itself. And so when I get into the right mindset, I don't know what it is, but sometimes like I'll see things in the eyes of these people that are creating these injustices. And it's like, I can all of a sudden get a glimpse of of that thing that's behind them, that's perpetrating all of this. And I just capture that moment and I call in on the angels and I say, thank you for, I'll just see a silver cord being run through their ears or through their head and asking the angels to take them away. And when I'm focusing on the situation, like even with all the truckers, it's like all of a sudden I see it spreading around the world, you know, that it's like pieces here on this earth and that we're claiming it, and that these things, these beings, that they're all going down, you know. So I'm asking the angels to come in and basically execute these things, take them away from the earth, that they don't belong here. This is our earth and we're taking it back. It's not even that we're taking back, we've already taken it back, the world. You know, it's like we have to focus on it being as if it's already happened, if that makes sense. And so then we change things, we shift something in the paradigms that are around the earth. And that's where right now everybody's so caught up in fear. And as soon as one person changes that, we see all of a sudden the whole world's become involved in this whole shift or change in this paradigm. These telemarketers keep calling.
Those are angels.
I like it.
They're on the psychic line.
Yeah. Well, what would you say is behind the nefarious actions of injustice? Like, what would you say that is?
To stop us from becoming self-empowered.
But why?
Just say, like, theoretically, that you had a corporation that you were in charge of, and it was a worldwide corporation, and it's yours. And you had a whole bunch of people that came forward and wanted to do something new, and they wanted to take over. Then you'd be a threat, right? So you would get upset and you'd want to hold control. And so you'd start doing things to hold that control, to hold that power. And this is where I think ancient regimes in our world, you know, when you look at some of these families like Rothschilds and a bunch of those old family names, you know, they go back thousands and thousands of years. Like, and so their families are invested in altering history, altering everything. And so when people start waking up and seeing ancient archaeology and how civilizations existed like 2 million years ago with intelligent people, and people were living in cities and communities, and it's like they don't want us to know about that stuff because they stole everything. They stole history, they rewrote history, they stole all the technologies. If they really did build, and like the Romans, let's say, they say that they built everything, it was all their technology. Well, if that was the case, then why didn't they keep building those things? Why didn't they keep developing those things? Everything's based on a lie. And you know, when we look at all of these things, like even with most religions, if we look at ancient practices like Buddhism, yogiism, Hasidics, you know, the Judaism, like these are all practices at attaining different vibrational levels of consciousness. We've been told that they're religions, but actually they're practices. The religion that most of us follow today is a belief system. And so people have been trained into what we call belief systems. And so people, they don't really actually know. They don't have real knowledge or understanding of these things. So that it's like, I believe because I was told that. And so that's what we're seeing in our world right now. That's why there's so much injustice that takes place in our world, is because people believe. It's the same thing, like when I studied in broadcasting, we were taught, I was trained as a writer producer for television. And it's just like, we were taught right at the very beginning, you're writing for an audience with an IQ of 60. And the reason that they believe that everyone has a very low IQ like that is because everyone will believe what you say. Everyone will believe what they read. Everyone will believe what they see. And so you can't show them too much. And so people are trained to believe. It's infuriating for a lot of people right now, because a lot of people just, they believe everything that they see on TV, everything they see on the news. They don't look for the truths. They don't do the research to find out, like, is it really true? Is it really what they say it is? And that's where it creates these schisms in the world, like where people are on two sides of the fence, because you have some people who look deeper and they get the information. And then you have all these other people that, well, they just believe what they're told. And so then you end up with these clashing ideas. And that's where injustices take place. And so sometimes these things have to happen. It's the same thing like when you were acknowledging what happened to me in the past. It's like, I had to have that discipline in my life. And it wasn't nice when it was happening. But later in life, I understand I needed that discipline. I don't know if you ever saw The Karate Kid, how he was trained by the master to wash windows. And he was like cursing, I hate washing windows. I don't want to wash any more windows. And he goes outside and this gang attacks him. And he's like, wah, wah, wah. It's like, there's things that we have to go through. And even right now with what's happening in the world, I like what some of the higher sources say, is that there's things on this earth that don't belong here and that they hide. They're constantly hiding and protecting themselves, and then they repeat what's happened. And so this time, as we move into the photon belt, we come into a time of complete enlightenment and illumination. Everything becomes illuminated. The truth becomes illuminated. And so this is the time where they go down once and for all, that they will never have power over us again. So these things have to happen to make that happen. And so we need to keep following and moving forward with things that we're doing at this time. We're taking action to stop these terrible things from happening. And if we all understand as well, we're on the cusp between two constellations. Pisces is the largest and the most ambiguous of all of the constellations, and gravitational forces, because the stars are so far apart in Pisces that we see that gravity is very weak. So the planets get further apart from each other. The wobble of the earth increases. There's all these things that take place. And during the time of Pisces, it's said that people look for, you know, when we look at even the meaning astrologically of Pisces, people will just let things happen. They don't know what action to take because they're feeling all of these things, but they don't know what to do with the feeling. And so if you can imagine in our world during the time of Pisces, during the age of Pisces, which lasted for 2,500 years, people look for governments and religions and things to be put in place so that they get told what to do because they don't know how to take action. They don't know what to do. And so these terrible atrocities can take place. And that's one with Pisces, they say that injustices can happen. It's like it's ruled by Neptune, which is all about deception, dictatorships, like all of these things. So we're coming out of that. And Aquarius is the exact opposite. It's the smallest of the star systems. Gravity is the strongest. And it's right at the galactic equator. So we're crossing into, and it also spans the photon belt. So it's a time where we become these powerful individuals. We become enlightened. We have access to all this inner knowledge, these things that we have inside of us, which can reach into the Akashic records, and we can become self-activated as individuals. We all have talents. We all have these powers within us, and we all have a purpose on this earth to take part on taking care of the earth. But we've been all harnessed through the emotions to focus on doing specific tasks for the corporation. Basically, the church is a corporation. The belief system is a corporation. It's like you do a job for the corporation and you get X number of dollars back for that. You're not trained to be who you are and to become all you can be, because that would be adverse to the corporation. So in a long-winded way, you should talk about why these things happen. And this is where the more that we go inside of ourselves right now is how we can start undoing some of these things and breaking the leashes of these corporate powers on us. And that's what's happening with the convoys and things right now. People are like, we want freedom. We want to be free. We don't want to be leashed to anything anymore. But at the same time, what is that going to look like afterwards, you know? And people want to go back to the way things were, but we can't go back. We want to move forward. So what is that going to look like next? And it's a very interesting time in history right now. And it's meant to happen. It has to happen so that we can connect as a global. And that's what, again, Aquarius is all about, a world of strong individuals, all connected. And everyone is who they truly are, doing what their purpose is here. And that's kind of counterintuitive of a corporate world, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answered your question.
It did. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's great. Somebody else have a question? All right, Aaron.
Hi, Jesse.
Hi, Aaron.
Thanks for being here with us. Really appreciate your time. I don't have a particular question, but you say you often approach it by just, is there something that you would like to tell me? So I guess I'll just ask that.
There seems to be the spirit of a woman next to you. And we're still connected?
Yep.
Oh, okay. All of a sudden, the picture disappeared. And I was just...
Oh, weird.
Oh, there you are. She didn't want to be seen.
Huh.
She's right on the, I guess it would be your left side, and she's like stroking your hair.
Oh.
It feels like an older person, and the cat's aware of her presence too. It feels like you've been struggling with some decisions that have to get made. And does that make sense? And
yep.
She says you're very strong, and to trust your intuition on it. It's like, I feel like you're going back and forth on things, and I'm not sure if she feels like a mother or grandmother. Does that make any sense?
Probably not a mother, perhaps a grandmother, but.
That's connected to your mom? Was your mom's mother connected to you in some way? Because I feel like there's mother, grandmother for some reason. And it feels like it's been a really difficult time for you, like that you've been really troubled about things, and she's been trying to comfort you. She'd like you to have tea with her one day and just and just let it out, she says. Feels like there's a decision that you feel like you need to make, but you don't want to make it. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
She just wants you to know that whatever decision you make, it will be okay. You're afraid to make the decision. And she's like, just make it when you're ready. You don't have to. I feel like you're feeling a bit frustrated that you want to push yourself to make the decision. And she says that there'll come a point where you'll just know and to trust it. Don't second guess yourself, feel it, because when you feel it, that's when you know. And this is again like what we kind of mentioned earlier, like the difference between thinking and feeling, that we get stuck in that place and then we get confused. And this, in a way, what you're going through right now is like an initiation, in a way, where you have to surrender to your feeling, that follow the feeling. And that's why you're going through this time, is, you know, is you're learning to trust the feeling a bit more and not to doubt it. And as you trust the feeling, it will always take us to a place where we feel better. There might be challenges to get there, but it's leading us on a path. And it's the same thing like with the ancient ways, like with the shaman and the healers, like they would go through an injury or an illness or an emotional upset, and as they're healing and going through that time, it's a difficult time, but they're incarnating the tools they need for the next part of the journey. So it feels like this that you're going through is a part of that that's required in some way. And she just wants you to know you're going to be fine. She watches over you and makes sure you're going to be okay. She's suggesting to drink more tea and soup.
Oh my God, I don't know how much more soup I could eat. I just had major abdominal and thoracic surgery. But okay. More soup it is.
You're going to be okay.
Oh, thank you.
She says you're strong and you will heal.
Thank you. Bless you.
Lovely to hear your laughter, Erin.
Thanks, Lynn.
Somebody else have a question? Daphne?
Hello, Josiah. Thank you so much for your presence here with us. Really appreciate it. So many questions and no questions, you know. I guess it's that whole this or that thing. But I also sit with you in that sense of the question about the bodhisattva in these times. And because is it not incumbent on each of us to take responsibility for our frequency, our waking up, our devotion to the practice? And then we'll be maybe adding some more coherent energy as opposed to incoherent energy out there.
The hard part is that we haven't really been trained on how to do that. It's kind of like in Harry Potter. It's like they went to school, they studied with all these great professors, but it was those three kids that they had to find their own way. They had challenges and things that were put in front of them they weren't trained to do. And this is where a lot of times we get so, there's all this vocabulary that we're given and that it becomes a jargon. And it's like, so we think we understand something, but it's only presented to us from the perspective of who it was presented by. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, thank you.
And like simple things like the word love. One angel came to me and he said, unconditional love is the practice of non-reaction. It's been stolen from the world. So you have to practice to bring it back into the world. And it's like, I didn't know what that meant. You know, it's like we all use the words of unconditional love, and I believe in unconditional love, and I love you unconditionally. But when I started looking it up, there was no definition for it. And it was kind of like, what does it really mean? And that's where, again, like in the Bible, it says God is unconditional love. God is in all things. The church, everybody goes to different forms of practices or religions, but nobody understands that premise. And unconditional love, like if we, again, like when you're in the place of love within yourself, and all of you could do it right now, if you just close your eyes, take a deep breath of air, just focus on the peaceful feeling inside of yourself, whatever it takes to get you there. You're there. You're already there. It's that simple. But we're not trained to practice that. We're trained that it takes hours of meditation and hours of worship and hours of church and hours of, and then there's all this vocabulary around it, but we're not taught to practice it, if that makes sense. And as soon as we go into that place and it's that simple, it's that immediate, you have access to everything. So many things, but it only lasts for a second. Like you're there for a second and then we're out, because we're trained to be so in our heads to think it all. We're looking for some Hollywood type of thing to take place. I used to teach a lot of fitness classes as well. I'm a fitness instructor and I would teach body alignment and breathing. And I'm also a yoga instructor. And it's just like, when we do something that's different of any kind, whether it's a simple exercise like what we're talking about right now, or you're doing a bicep curl, or you're doing down dog, or shavasana, it's like the first time we do these things, we can only do it once or twice, and it takes time. It's a practice. that we build upon. And the more we do it, especially when we're dealing with things like what you're talking about, that place of Bodhisattva, it's about being in that place, but nobody describes it that simply. And the more that you do that, the longer, the more your body remembers or your brain will remember, that's a safe place.
Yeah.
When I studied in teaching, I taught a lot of high impact aerobics for a lot of years. And it was an interesting thing that we're learning how to teach fitness classes. All the exercises that we're given are coming out of military operations, and even a lot of yoga was taught to the military. And when we look at that concept, it's all about being on the outside, an external thing. And so the breathing exercises, like one of the things that was the most profound thing working with people through the years and even working with bodybuilders, it's like whenever people do an exertion exercise, they're taught to exhale as you exert, no matter what it is. It's like, and if we look at military operations, when you exhale, it's your body's, it gets a message that if we don't get air right away, then the body faints or goes to the ground to keep oxygen and blood flowing to the brain. And so every time somebody does an exertion exercise, when they exhale, they cause the body to separate itself and go into a place of instability where the joints can become damaged and all kinds of problems can happen. Through my learning with breathing techniques and exercises, I learned that when you inhale, you put the body into a safe place where we're safe and protected, and your joints can't be overextended. Your body goes into a natural state so that when you're lifting weights, you can't put the joints into compromised positions, because when you inhale, you expand the body and everything's in a safe position, a safe place. As soon as you exhale, everything becomes hypermobile, which leads to damage of joints and muscle. So even just doing one exercise properly, when I would get bodybuilders to do the exercise and breathe differently, they get really angry. And a lot of people get really angry when they do that, because they're all of a sudden they're altering the brain. The brain actually builds neurological function when we breathe properly and add breath in that way to when we exert. We inhale, when we stop and we're in a stable position, exhale, then your body gets to build this safety and this feeling of equanimity within itself. So when we look at these concepts of being in the safe place, everything in our world is teaching us outside of ourselves. And so when we're stressed, when we have fear, like even right now, like with fear around the world of this deadly disease that the CDC says that 80% of the population will only have mild flu-like symptoms, fear takes over. But if we look at fear, fear creates a very specific postural alignment. It's like the shoulders will roll in, the head comes down. And so we go into what's called shock syndrome, which leads to shallow breathing. And what's one of the symptoms of COVID? Shallow breathing, inability to breathe, headaches. We'll have headaches because the body, posture of the body when we're in a fear state. So there's all these symptoms that fear will mimic the actual virus. But it's like, so we see how we breathe is determined by the emotions that we're experiencing. And so to change those things, being in that place of that breath, like what I just had you all experience a minute ago, it's that quick, that simple, where we can adjust these things and our posture will change, our minds will change. It's a very difficult thing to stay in. You know, as much as I can talk about it, it's like I'm no expert. I'm still learning it and trying to practice it myself. And so the spirits always teach that the emotions, again, are evil spirits, and it's ancient medicine as well. They enter the body. So every time I feel overwhelmed with fear or anger or grief, any kind of anxiety, I ask the angels to return it to its source. So I quite often use Elvis Presley's Return to Sender. And because the emotions don't belong to us. They always come from the outside. There's a very brilliant writer. Her name was Dionne Fortune. She wrote this book on psychic self-defense. You can still order it, but it was written in 1890. She's a brilliant writer. She was the founder of the Golden Dawn. And she talks about these things, the emotions, any disease. And one of the biggest things she says is cancer at that time in the 1890s was the rarest of all diseases. And she said, but just like the emotions, we know that all these things come from the outside, that the body doesn't just develop these things, that there's some toxin or some poison or some spirit, something entering the body and causing a disease. It's just coming to that place with our breath. Our breath will kind of guide us into that place. And the more that we, you know, if we can imagine breathing and drawing the energy of the earth up and out the top of our head, and then as we exhale, drawing the energy of the universe back into the earth.
Love that.
It brings calm right away. And so whenever we catch ourselves in an emotional state, what we want to do, and that's again, like if we look at the idea of the Bodhisattva, bringing it back to that a simple explanation, then we need to breathe deeply and release the emotions, send them back to where they came from. We're all channels. And this is one of the things that we don't understand about right now, these beings that have created fear around the world. It's very difficult to protect ourselves right now. I remember back in the 90s, I was going to these talks, and this woman, she said that there's going to come a time in the near future where the protection of the angels will be ripped away from us, and we have to know how to protect ourselves during that time. And I just remember, she's stupid. But really, we're in that time that a lot of us have done all this study and all this work, but how do we actually put it into practice? Mm-hmm. And if we think that it's difficult, it's just so simple. And it all comes back to our vocabulary. If we use words and descriptions, it sounds so wonderful, but how do we get rid of those things and focus on what is the real practice? What does it mean? What do the words mean? And this is a very powerful time for us then, and that there's a gift in this whole thing with COVID. It's making us, it's forced us into isolation. It's forced us into ourselves, where we had to be with ourselves and we had to practice being inside of ourselves. And the problem with the fear is it didn't matter where you are, it could still get inside of us. And so that's where we need to send it away, because as long as these beings can incite fear on the world, it blocks the protection of the angels. And so our jobs right now is to be in that place, be in the present moment, feel the love inside of you, because that gives the angels a channel through you into the world, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's like your cell phone, when the battery dies, you have to plug it into the wall. And so you have, the power has access to get inside of your phone. Same thing with the angels. They've been disconnected from us with what's happening. And so the only way that they have access to the earth and to the world around us is through love inside, when we feel that. And so if we start practicing being in that place, stabilizing ourselves, then we give them, we become channels of that act and give them access to come into the world to protect the world. It's a pretty big concept, but no pressure.
That's fabulous, Josiah. Hey, I thank you very much for all of this, the generosity of your time.
It was a pleasure to meet with all of you today. And you're all here to do the work of the angels. We have to give them access through us to the world around us. And it's a big job for us fringe people.
I guess we're ready and available.
May the forces be with you. Yeah. Well, have a wonderful day, all of you, and thank you for connecting. And
thank you, Josiah. Really appreciate meeting you.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Josiah. You all.
Well, bye-bye. Thank you again.
Totally. I don't know how to do this.
Technology.
You just can't get unconnected.
I'm not going anywhere.
I think he's still there.
He's still there.
It's just so precious, you know.
Totally.
Be present. Totally.
You need to restart your phone.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
There you go.
But, oh, there he is. I love it.
Thank you all for being here. That was awesome.
That was very cool.
It is.
That was very cool.